you know, we do a lot of good interviews, but this one's really, really good. We've got a treat for you guys this week for Christmas. We got Pete Weber on the podcast. He's another one kind of on the list of people we've wanted to talk to for a long time. We hopped on a Zoom with him a few days ago. And we had a really, really interesting conversation. It was excellent.
Yeah, he's one I've really wanted to talk to for a long time. He's, you know, he runs probably the best cycling development program for youth in the nation.
Other than ours.
Oh, they're
other than ours, obviously.
Okay, that's funny, but no, he.
No, but actually, no.
They really do. They have the best minds in the sport are involved with this program that he runs. And
if Boulder Junior Devo had existed in Salt Lake, I don't think we would have felt a need to found Maybird. I'll put it that way. We're trying to emulate them.
Yeah.
I think it would be fair to say.
And it's cool because we're talking about some stuff that I've messed up on in the past, and it's affected the lives of youth and so forth. And I think athlete development's really, really important. And it's something, it's kind of a new territory with cycling. So it's something I've been really excited about, and I think it's just some really, really valuable information, and it's something I think we can delve a lot deeper into.
Yeah. So I give it a listen in just a moment here, but we do have a couple of announcements we want to hit. First and foremost, as a lot of you saw on Instagram, we have scheduled the beginning of year Maybird meeting to launch the 2026 season. That will be Wednesday, January 7th. At 6:30 p.m. at the Salt Lake,
the Salt Lake Library,
downtown. Yeah. So, same place we had the meeting last year. It was awesome. We're going to do this MLM style. You need to invite at least two friends, and they need to bring two friends, and they need to bring two friends. No, but at least that first layer, like bring some people, bring some people from your Nike team. I would say, like, you know, we don't, hold you at gunpoint and make you sign up there. Like, you know, you show up and you see if you feel like it's for you, you fill out the Google form, right? So there's no harm in coming down. It's a great kind of social event. Good to see people and kind of connect and usually talk about the skiing we've been doing.
Yeah, but we won't.
Not this
year.
You know, bring some folks from your Nike team. You know, a thing we think about a lot is that, you know, the really heavy hitters that we have on the team this year were little kids wearing jeans and platform pedals on a Nike team at one point, you know, by and large. So we need to get the, you know, we always want to be looking at the, you know, the next 10 years of Maybird, and that starts, you know, that starts here. So make sure to bring people along.
You know, and if you're a post Nike rider, we want a really strong post Nike presence in Maybird. And also, if you know what you're doing, if you know your way around bikes, if you've got some racing and fitness experience and you're good with kids, and, you know, we're going to need some help with coaching and leading groups, especially post Nike riders. You know, if you can set aside one day a week, we're going to need you.
We will take that one day a week. We will take whatever, you know, I say it before, like, you guys are all the benefactors of volunteer coaching. And I do think there's an expectation that if you are at all able to, you ought to give, you know, some of that back. So, make sure to come. And if nothing else, you get to see Dan public speak, which is so much fun, cause you don't get nervous at all. Outside of that, and by the way, we're going to hit the meeting, you know, we'll mention this plenty more times. Everybody reposted it. You know, we will make sure you guys don't forget. In the short term though, being that A, it's Christmas week, and B, that tomorrow the high is 60 degrees here in Salt Lake City. We're not going to do a Zwift. I think people are off school and at 60 degrees, and I can't imagine that people are going to be...
You're not going to skip your ride during the day so you can Zwift in the evening.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's a bummer because we want to have, like, consistency, but this has been a weird off season. So to all the people who showed up last week, thank you.
That was fun.
Except for the guys who ripped my legs off. I hurt for 2 days after, which you don't have to do, by the way. You can show up. I mean, there was a huge group. We had
a good group, and it was fun.
A ton of people, all, you know, like... It's really fun. So when we do continue those after Christmas, you should make sure to come. Same for running group this week, just being that it's the holiday and that I think a lot of people are going to ride. We're going to skip out on those.
But. Okay. I hope you guys are looking for something awesome to do the morning after Christmas. We're gonna do.
Forgot about this. Okay.
We're gonna do the 4.5 hours of Tempest Fugit, and the whole thing is try and get like a buddy that's gonna do it with you, so you guys can work together. Because I want to first see if people can. And I think there's guys that are gonna be able to do it in under 4 hours. I think there's going to be people that can do that. My goal is 4.5 hours.
Wait, so is this a distance? Are we shooting for like a century?
We're shooting for a century. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying it's a 4.5 hour event. And we're going to see if someone can do it in under 4 hours. I'm like, I bet I can do it in 5 minutes. So 100 miles of Tempest Fugit. Yeah. So confusingly, I forgot about this. So there will kind of be, I should have probably asked you beforehand, but this is the level we operate at. Am I scheduling like a specific Maybird ride where it'll start at the same time for everybody?
Yeah. Okay.
So I guess there will be a team. So it's kind of been an unusual and different one. This will be, you're doing it the 26th?
Yeah, we'll do it the 26th at whatever time I set on Team Snap.
At whatever time Dan decides later that on Instagram.
I think I had it at 6 o'clock. It's early, and I wanted to do it early just so it doesn't take up most of your day. Like, you can still go skiing after this. Like, the red snake will be dead by then, and you can get up and...
Don't waste your time. It's a mess. So I will schedule this on the Team Zwifts. All you got to do, there's a either on Instagram or on Team Snap, you can find a link. You click the link. You do have to have the Zwift companion app downloaded on your phone. But as soon as you click that link, it basically tells Zwift, hey, next time you sign in.
And there's a little plus mark that you click.
You basically click the plus, hey, I'm going to join this event. And then when you log in close to time, it'll allow you to join. So come to that. I will come to at least part of that. Do you know what Tempest Fugit means in Latin?
Yeah, you told us last time. It means like time passes or something.
Time passes, which I think is a funny name for that flat course in the desert. So
your buddy Michael Ellsworth signed up, so you kind of have to do it.
My buddy Michael Ellsworth is a freak. I hope he listens to this, I'd imagine.
He does, actually.
So I'm this is kind of a shout out and maybe a warning to others. There were a couple of times during that Team Zwift where I almost didn't believe that he's a real person. Because, like, the numbers he's
putting
out...
Have you ever actually met him in person?
I have. I want to say I have, but it's been a minute.
He is probably one of the coolest people I know. He is so nice. And he is really that fast in real life. He's amazing. So
yeah, he was pumping some... numbers.
Yeah.
He was pumping some numbers and I hurt really bad. So,
he'll be there. So you don't want to miss it.
Oh, that's quite the incentive. Make sure you come to those. Aside from that, I don't want to skip ahead. Am I forgetting any stuff?
I think that's it, but I really do want a lot of people to do this ride on the 26th.
It'll be fun.
It'll be fun. Eat a lot of cookies the day before.
It'll be fun.
And so you'll be all carved up and ready to go.
Find a couple movies to watch.
Yeah. Get some distractions and
In the meantime though, have a Merry Christmas. I was going to say stay warm. That won't be hard.
Pray for snow.
Pray for snow. Stay safe. If you're going to ride, this week and, Merry Christmas. Here's Pete Weber. Pete Weber, thank you so much for giving us some of your time.
This is kind of like an early Christmas present for me. I'm super, super excited to have Pete here. I think as most of us listening to this podcast probably know that kind of the center of the cycling universe in the United States is Boulder, Colorado. It seems like that's kind of where most of the best minds related to the sport are concentrated. It's just an amazing cycling community, and they have produced one of probably the most respectable youth cycling programs I've ever heard of. It's one that I've actually always admired, and it's one that I've honestly kind of tried to model Maybird after in a lot of ways, and that's Boulder Junior Cycling. I think most people would recognize their kits. And the person responsible for running that is Pete Weber, who he's been a guest on Fast Talk numerous times. He's very well respected in the cycling community, just one of the great minds in terms of coaching and youth development and athlete development. And so we're just so lucky to be able to have him on as a guest. And thanks so much, Pete, for your time. And We've had a bunch of different technical difficulties on our end, and Pete's got a power outage he's dealing with. So the audio quality is not going to be the world's finest, but hope, but I'm confident the information we get to share is going to be good. And so thank you so much, Pete, for being here.
Okay, well, geez, thanks for that introduction. That was great. It's good to hear that the work we're doing here in Boulder is spreading beyond our borders, and I look forward to chatting with you guys about it.
I'm curious, Pete, what do you think it is about Boulder? Why Boulder and not somewhere else that's produced all these amazing athletes and
Yeah, well,
resources and mines and
well, I moved here myself. I'm from Maine, back on the East Coast. I moved here in the early 90s to be part of the cycling culture here in Boulder. I mean, first the geography, the landscape, and the weather are fantastic for sports, and especially endurance sports. But I think the culture of the community, going way back, is sort of what created that endurance sports community. We have a lot of higher education here with the University of Colorado. We have what we call the federal labs, but there's a real big science community in Boulder. And I think that's the kernel of what drew people here. And then just like people started following each other. There's nothing special about the water. And there's some downsides too, pros and cons like anything, but I feel lucky to be here and to be part of our community.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Pete, why don't you just take a second, just kind of introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, that kind of how you got to where you are, and just a little bit about yourself would be really interesting for us.
I started out in youth sports. I was real keen alpine ski racer. I went to a ski racing high school, and I continued alpine ski racing in college. But then I discovered cycling, and specifically mountain biking, road biking, and just developed a passion for it. And moved out here to Boulder to try my hand at professional racing. I was a professional mountain bike racer for a number of years, and didn't think I'd stay, but I stuck it out here in Boulder, and eventually worked my way into bicycle advocacy. I worked for the International Mountain Bike Association for about 12 years, and trail building, trail advocacy, everything around the, managing the sport of mountain biking. And then I moved into coaching, and got involved with Boulder Junior Cycling, and I've been here about 12 years.
Well, that's awesome. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about Boulder Junior Cycling, kind of your maybe your philosophy, some of your objectives. Tell us just a little bit more about the program. I think most people would recognize your kits and have heard of you. You're one of the more recognizable teams in the nation, but why don't you tell us
Sure.
a little bit about that?
We call it BJC. It was founded in 2006, so it's been 18, 19 years now. It was started by a number of families that wanted to provide their kids with better coaching and development around the sport of bike racing. And at first, it was just a handful of families, and it really just grew very gradually. We've been around a long time, and so we've been able to create some systems and a great support network, some real passionate coaches that have been involved for many of them over 15 years. And we have just a wonderful community in Boulder, cycling community that is able to support us. We're lucky. M many communities around the country wouldn't have that critical mass of cycling and bike racing to support a youth program for as many years as we have here in Boulder. So You know, some of the things we're able to do might not be possible just anywhere, and we recognize that. So we're coming into our 18th, 19th year, and we've really grown and developed a lot. And I would say we've been able to put into place like a philosophy and some values, learned through trial and error, as well as through studying best practices for youth sports. And these values or philosophy are, you know, forefront in the way we operate and the way we tackle youth sports. And, you know, probably the biggest thing is just focusing on developing great kids and great people first. And we put race results second, because we know that not everyone can win bike races, but everyone can grow as a person and become a great human and learn critical life lessons. And, you know, if you think about it, that's why people get involved with youth sports in the first place, is to provide young people with a positive learning experience. And so that's just the number one value that BJC has, and really any youth sports program should put first.
And that's something I couldn't agree more with, and something I feel really strongly about as well, because, you know, we just have such a good opportunity to work with these youth and help them become better people, because, you know, so far our program hasn't had a great track record of creating professional athletes, but hopefully we've been able to create a lot of better people through some of these opportunities. So I really do respect that and appreciate that. So how did you, and I guess let me just back up a little bit. The last couple of years, a lot of the coaches that do some of these development programs have been involved with some like email chains and some group phone calls. And I noticed that Pete seemed to be really, really passionate about athlete development. And why don't you talk about that for a second, about what that is and how you became so passionate about athlete development?
Sure. Well, I was an athlete myself. As I mentioned, I was an alpine ski racer. So from a very young age, I was just all in on ski racing, and it was a wonderful experience for me. And I took a lot away, but eventually, you know, I moved away from the sport, and you know, I didn't become an Olympian or a professional skier, but I still recognized how valuable it was to me as a person. And so then fast forward a bunch of years later, and I was asked to be the executive director of Boulder Junior Cycling. And so I had to sort of go to school and prepare myself for that job by studying, you know, what are the best practices for youth development. And there's just some wonderful resources out there. And it didn't take me long to study up and learn, you know, about these principles of youth development. And it all, the foundation is thinking long-term. When we're developing athletes, you have to have your horizon way out into the future. And you have to think about not just success this weekend or even this season, but you have to think about what are the markers of success long term. And then if you step backwards, you're like, well, how can we get there? And you start to see that that long term development approach will, you know, lead you to the best outcomes you can hope for in terms of creating great kids, but also great athletes. And so, you know, some of those principles of long-term athlete development is like the right kind of coaching, practices, races, whatever, for where each kid is in their timeline. So younger kids, you know, their sports experience is going to be mostly fun, games, learning the basics of being an athlete, developing skills, learning about effort, you know, basically just like a learning environment, without even thinking about racing or race results. And if that's step one, you can imagine there's just a series of steps that follow kids as they develop, gradually implementing, you know, more details and more sport specific things along the way. But it's just critical that you don't do that too fast, or that you don't skip steps in that development timeline. So that's sort of a little bit of an overview of it.
I'm curious to know, Pete, because I've been coaching since I got out of NICA, you know, for going on a decade now. And then in my professional life, I'm a school teacher. I work with middle school age kids. And I find that cycling, and this is probably true of a lot of outdoor and endurance sports, really tend to attract really mature, highly motivated kids. And I find more often than not that I'm almost trying to temper my kids' expectations, or tell them to, you know, I don't have to tell kids to get out and work. It's usually the opposite. How do you help kids have realistic expectations without like damping that sort of, you know, that the ambition you want them to have to succeed? Do you ever find that's difficult?
Yeah. Boy, that's a really interesting question. I think you have to approach each kid as an individual. And the first most important thing is really engaging with the athlete on like a personal level, understanding, you know, what are they up to? What do they do at home? What do they like to do? You know, what kind of personality do they have? Asking them questions, building trust, you know, so the athlete and the coach trust each other. They can have open conversations, and that partnership is based on, like, you know, I'll say love, where the athlete and the coach can work together really well. That's super important. And then another element to this is educating the athlete about, you know, what are the ingredients of success? And if you're making a cake, for example, you know, like, what are the ingredients and what's the order that you mix in the batter? And we don't want to skip steps. We don't want to jump to the frosting before we've mixed in the flour, you know? And so once they trust you, they'll start to understand, you know, like, okay, I have to develop my skills before I can just go out and go on an epic training session. I have to learn how to pace myself before I can, you know, jump into a top level race. I think that's, those are some things I think about. And then another big topic we can talk about today is that kids develop at different speeds. It's not a linear thing, and not every 13-year-old is the same. And in some of our teams, we attract early performers. So kids that, for whatever reason, are ahead of their peers, and they might have hit their growth spurt earlier. They might have had other advantages like better equipment or more coaching or just more opportunity. And the community might identify an early performer as someone who has a lot of potential to go to the top of the sport. But we've learned that's a mistake. You know, early success does not necessarily lead to future success, or it doesn't predict future success. And so that's why it's important to engage with all the kids, not just the ones that are winning races this weekend.
Yeah, that's and that's something I've observed myself and even been guilty of in the past is, you know, like you get like a junior Devo athlete that's a superstar and they kind of get used to that success and then when their peers kind of start catching up to them, they kind of lose the love for it a little bit because some of the rewards for the success kind of diminish. I think that that's definitely an important point to make there. What are some of the steps you think that we, I guess, or maybe some of the steps we might miss or mistakes we might make as coaches, parents, development clubs that you've observed that kind of bother you a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's a catchphrase I picked up. I think it was from a website or a podcast or something. And so I'll say what it is, and it's, we want to make sure we're racing to the right finish line. So what is the finish line that our team is going for? And if you think about it, you know, is it getting to the Tour de France, or is it making great kids? And let's make sure collectively we're racing to the right finish line. When you have members of your team that start thinking short-term success or an unhealthy focus on results, you know, sometimes there needs to be a process, you know, a discussion, some conversations, earning some trust to get everyone understanding, you know, what's the bottom line here? You know, what are the goals? What are our values? Let's make sure those are first and foremost. And so, you know, are we teaching good sportsmanship, strong character? Are we considering mental health and what's in the best interest of the athlete? Is it age appropriate? You know, are we speeding things up too fast? Are we considering the whole athlete, not just race results? So all of these sort of soft side things, you know, to me, that's the right finish line that we're racing towards. And the getting to the pro ranks or something is not the finish line that we're striving for.
What would be an example of maybe speeding things up too fast or skipping some steps, like you gave the analogy of making a cake or something before? What would be kind of an example of maybe speeding things up a little bit too fast in athlete development?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Great question. You guys probably have some examples, but moving a kid, if your program or your sport has groups, sometimes people want to move up to a more advanced group at a young age. So a 12-year-old might be the fastest 12-year-old in the group, and they want to start riding with the 14-year-olds. And the temptation often is, yeah, that seems like that could be a good move. You know, you're fast enough to ride with the 14-year-olds, and you're mature, and maybe you're getting bored with the 12-year-olds. But you could, on the flip side, you could see how that could backfire. Perhaps that young person would start to feel pressure to perform well, or feel like the adults around them have really high expectations, in that by elevating the young person into a more advanced group, are we sending a message that, like, results is really important to us? You as an athlete, winning the championship race that's coming up is really important to us. And that's not a signal we want to send. I mean, these are still kids. They may be extremely accomplished athletes, but You know, they still have only been on this planet for 12 or 14 or 16 years. So we have to be honest with ourselves. And so we have to be patient. We have to have that long-term perspective and make sure that the athlete is mastering everything they need as a 12-year-old before we move them up into a higher group. Another mistake might be entering young kids in a race designed for adults, in terms of like the, how difficult it might be. We want to provide them with an appropriate, age-appropriate level of challenge. They have not been an athlete for that many years. And while they claim they can race 50 miles or they ride 50 miles in practice, it doesn't mean that we should enter them in a 50 mile race. You know, just because they can do it doesn't mean they should. And one of my coworkers here at BJC is Lester Pardo, and he's a veteran coach who has been instrumental in developing BJC's values and philosophies. And so his analogy is for parents, you know, parents will say, my kid's ready for the 50 mile race. And Lester would say, well, you know, your kid would eat pizza every night if they could, but you know, that's not healthy. So you ask them to eat broccoli from time to time too. Yeah. And so you have to be a good parent.
I'm curious on that parent note. I think one of the coolest experiences I've had working in the sport is seeing how much passion parents have for their kids, that cycling obviously is so good for you, that parents are willing to throw, I mean, not just like money, but time and stuff at this. How often do you think it goes a little far and you have parents who are contributing to burnout and stuff? Is that something you see commonly or is it not that common for you guys?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty common. You know, I'm a parent. I know how much I love my daughter and want the best for her and put tremendous amounts of energy and heart and thoughtfulness into raising your child. And you just want what's best. And it's so easy to overparent and to, you know, remove obstacles in the way of your child or set them up for success in every way that you can think of. That's a great instinct and we all share it as parents. But I think we can all understand that, like, sometimes you go too far and you're actually stifling your child's development by doing everything for them, by bulldozing all obstacles out of their way. And so we have to give our kids the right balance in whether it's coaching or parenting. It's like we have to play that role of a guide, you know, nudging them along the path and not so much like a leader out in front. So that role of a guide is important. And then if we're talking specifically about sports, you know, as a parent, we need to remind ourselves that we're using sports to teach life lessons, to raise great kids, thinking about the whole person, and let them lead their sporting journey. The sport is for them. The sport is not for us. And so there's a catchphrase I've heard. It's called release your child to the game. And so what that means is, like, you know, put your child into a youth sports program, make sure they're safe, make sure you support them, but they need to feel like the sport is their thing and let them own it, let them make mistakes. And that can be hard, especially like in cycling, because a lot of the kids that are involved with cycling, it's because their parents are cyclists and super passionate about the sport. And a lot of parents have tremendous expertise in cycling. Maybe they were a racer themselves. And so they're tempted to play a role of coach. In fact, in many youth sports, programs, you know, the parents are the coaches. And now you're getting into real tricky territory when you're coaching your own kid. So we like to say is let the coach be the coach. And parents should have a shirt with a big S on the front that stands for supporter. And they gradually, as the child ages and grows, they take more and more of a back seat. Let the coaches be the coaches. Parents should not step in and be a coach. Let the coach do their job. And let the kids have a lot of ownership of their own sport, so that they can guide it in the way that they want. And we shouldn't put any pressure or expectations onto their shoulders.
Man, I want to write that down and publish it in a book for everyone to read. I think that's amazing. And I'm also a kind of secondary, somewhat related question I have is that I like cycling is the best thing that ever happened to me. I think I can trace all of the good things in my life to like the NYCA program. And for a long time, especially when I was in school, if someone asked me to introduce myself, I would have said, I am the cyclist. It was like the core part of my identity. I think in a lot of ways, cycling did for me what like religion did for a lot of people. It was the almost like the core of my soul, and it became my professional life for years and years. But in retrospect, I think sometimes that maybe wasn't the right approach. So I wonder, like, do you want your kids to identify as cyclists? Because, you know, it seems like that was a big part of helping me be passionate about it and make the sacrifices to do it. But it also made it really difficult for me to accept when things are going well. Like what role do you think for an impressionable young kid, like the identity of being a cyclist has?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you sound like me where you love the sport of cycling, and it's not only a hobby, it's really baked into your life, and you've learned what a wonderful activity is, all the benefits of cycling, and you want others to share that with you. You want to expose them to it because it's just like, you know, let me show you this. And so if you have kids and you're a cyclist, you're like, I want my kid to be a cyclist. You know, this is a wonderful activity, and I want what's best for them. But it's like, you know, I think as parents, we all know that is a slippery slope because, in fact, you could be driving them away, because they want to be different than mom and dad. And well, I should say when they're young, they want mom and dad's approval. They love mom and dad's support, and they'll do anything to get to show mom and dad and to earn that love. And then as they get older, as a teenage year, that's often can flip flop, and they want to get as much distance as possible. And we have to navigate that we have to navigate that with our kids. And so I would just say, like, you know, cycling is not the only pastime that's wonderful. There's a lot of other things in life, and music and school and art and every other type of sport or activity. So it seems to me that as parents, you know, a good strategy is to expose our kids to tons of different things. Give them a well-rounded background. We don't know what's going to connect with them most. It could be cycling, it could be music, it could be art, it could be football, it could be tennis. And so let them try all these things, and that'll make them a well-rounded person, and they might find what their true love is, or maybe even what they're best at. They might find that they're not that good at cycling, but they're really good at music. But we won't know that if we don't let them try. And in BJC, we apply that in the area of athletics. So we want the kids to be well-rounded athletes. We encourage them to do multiple sports. We don't require them to enroll in programs year round. And we actively ask them to take time off the bike in the winter. We promote off the bike training as well as on the bike, and we also want to expose them to the different disciplines within cycling, whether it's mountain biking or road biking, gravel, cyclocross, gravity riding. So they become well-rounded cyclists and can find which they're most passionate about if cycling is what's in their blood.
And there's just so much wisdom there. And that's one of the many reasons I admire your program so much, because there's just so much wisdom in your knowledge base. And I did want to jump back a little bit. A second ago, we were talking about parents and coaches, and I want to talk a little bit about coaches. Do you think, because a while ago, or just a little while ago, I was thinking about it, and I kind of had this epiphany that there's definitely a difference between coaching for performance and coaching for development. And do you think that most coaches are equipped to coach youth athletes, or do you think too many of them treat them just like miniature adults or something?
Well, generally, you know, across our society, we have a need for millions of youth sports coaches, right? Across the US or even the world. And so how are we going to fill all those shoes? We're going to be drawing from volunteers and a wide range of people who will become youth sports coaches. And so it just stands to reason that, you know, a large number of them are not going to be well-trained or have time to be educated on best practices for youth sports. And, you know, there is a big movement across the country, I've noticed in the past 10 years, to provide more education for youth sports. There's something I heard, I forget, I probably have this wrong, but it's like the Million Coach Challenge. One of these youth sports organizations put out there, and their goal, they had set a goal to train 1 million youth sports coaches. So I think that's great. And when you're talking about cycling clubs like ours, you're going to have the same thing. Like we need coaches. They're hard to find. It's not a full-time job for most people. So they're moonlighting. They have a career, some other kind of career. And then they're just going to be a youth cycling coach part-time, 2, 3, 4 hours a week. And they're just not going to have time for like in-depth training and years of education and experience. And so you're going to have a huge wide range of coaches in our sport. So if we are going to offer families a program, you know, I think we are responsible to provide well-trained coaches, and then put those coaches into the right roles that their training and experience would dictate that they're ready for. So, you know, if we have a new coach who doesn't have much training or education yet, you know, maybe they're only gonna be in a very small role, something that they can handle to start. And then, as you pointed out, if a coach has been asked to coach for performance on the racing side, maybe older kids, more days a week, attending more races, you know, many, many hours per year, then we should make sure that coach is more highly trained and has an education to match that level. For BJC, you know, and I say all that, and there's not a lot of resources for education for cycling coaches. It's not like soccer where type in a few words in Google, you'll find 100 books about teaching youth soccer. I don't know. I only know of one or two books that have been written about teaching youth cycling. So we have a dearth of information, and it's hard to find. So what I've learned is, like, actually, let's lean into these other coaching resources that have been published that are not about cycling, but they've really mastered the art of coaching kids. And so our coaches start by learning those fundamentals, and they're not learning about cycling or like how to do a wheelie or something. First, they're learning about how to coach kids. And that's one way you can handle that dilemma.
Yeah, that's really good, because yeah, there's so much information out there for amateur cyclists that take it very, very seriously, but it's mostly geared towards adults, and there really isn't a whole lot out there that focuses on youth and youth coaching and training and so forth. And I just wonder if some of those principles for adult training might not translate super well for training 12 to 16 year olds or something.
And I'm curious, Pete, maybe another way to ask this is like, what is the actual difference for, you know, between a grown up and a child? Because we were all children, but I found I'm in my second year as a sixth grade teacher, and the amount I have learned about what it's like to be a child that I forgot from being a child has been crazy. So what would you say to someone who's maybe new to coaching and has their own kids, but is in the head of a grown-up? Like, what is actually the difference between a grown-up and a kid that makes this distinction so meaningful?
Yeah. Holy moly.
There's a lot in that question.
Yeah, there's a lot.
All right, we take that in pieces.
It also depends what age we're talking about. You know, a 12-year-old is early in their development, whereas a 16-year-old, just in 4 years, can make leaps and bounds, both physically and like intellectually. If we just consider all ages for the sake of simplicity here, you know, we know that kids have short attention spans. They're best with simple concepts. They need a lot of like emotional support, positive reinforcement. Whereas like an adult, a weekend warrior who comes to a coach for a training plan to do Leadville 100, you know, they're ready for complex training plans and no muss, no fuss, just give me the facts, crack the whip. I want to be accountable. Tell me how it is, and make me do the work. Right. But a 13-year-old isn't ready for complex training plans and isn't going to respond well to a drill sergeant style of coaching. They're going to respond to simple concepts, fun games. We almost have to sneak the skills development past their radar and put it in the form of a game or something. So it goes back to that, just like long-term development and just thinking about providing things step by step and not rushing ahead too much. And so, you know, we say like, put development before winning. So skill acquisition, learning, teaching them how to give a solid effort. Those things are going to translate over the years, and they're not yet ready to learn things about endurance or intervals or even racing. So, I mean, we could spend all day talking about these concepts, you know, to boil it down, I still just return to this concept of teaching life lessons as the primary first goal and value. There's a concept called the double goal coach, and this is at the root of BJC's philosophy as well. And it comes from an organization called the Positive Coaching Alliance. And this is a nationwide nonprofit, Positive Coaching Alliance. They have awesome resources, and they have a basic coach certification class, and it's called the double goal coach. And what it means by it is that coaches should have two goals. The first goal is teaching life lessons through sport. And then the second goal is helping kids achieve their personal best. But the first goal is the most important one. And if we just structure our practices, structure our program, structure our season around the two goals, you know, I think that that will lead to good outcomes all the time. But if you get trapped into thinking that, that your goals are results oriented, race result oriented goals, then you'll start to find your program has some missteps or some hiccups or enrollment goes down, or you, you'll start to see that in your outcomes. So, I mean, you know, rewinding to what you were asking about the difference of coaching kids versus adults. I didn't answer that specifically, but I hope I gave a sense of the way we approach that.
Oh, more than you. I don't know if Pete, I don't know if you've written a book, but you should.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Well, Pete, I know we're kind of running out of time a little bit here, but honestly, I'd like to do like a long road trip with you and just pick your brain for like 6 hours, because I have just learned so much in these few minutes with you. I guess kind of my final question would be is you know, what can we do better to help kids become like more lifelong athletes? You know, what's probably the biggest thing that we need to do? The biggest takeaway, I guess, we could take from this to make sure that this sporting experience that they're doing right now ends up being a net positive for them in their life. And what would you say would be the biggest takeaway?
Yeah. Okay. Let me think about how I want to say this. I mean, if we think about designing a team or a curriculum or a program, and we think about what we want the, how are we going to measure success? You know, one way we're going to measure is like what you were just saying, is like keeping kids involved for the long term, you know, making sure they have positive outcomes. That whole concept of like, how do we measure success? And so instead of measuring it based on like winning races or national rankings, let's measure success by saying like, you know, how fun are our team practices? What's our retention rate? How often do kids return year after year after year? What about the alumni? Are the alumni still riding bikes in college and beyond? You know, are they successful in their life and in their endeavors? If those are how we measure success, then you go back to things like, let's making sure we have a really, really great team culture that kids want to be part of, that is really, really positive, for all the participants, not just the ones that are winning races. You know, does your program have a reputation for, fun, positivity, safety, you know, that team culture, great practices, great coaches, just a good vibe, like really part of the community, teaching sportsmanship? Do you have a volunteer program? You know, are you a real contributor to your community with a positive culture? If you can create a team like that, then that's going to lead to like those big wide smiles at practices and kids coming back year after year. And I think that's how we can measure if we're successful or not.
Wow. I wish I could stick the landing that well ever. That's awesome, Pete. I really appreciate you giving us your time. I want to say too, from spending a lot of time at races and seeing your kids out there, your philosophy is evident in the way that they ride and race. They're friendly, they're nice. And if there's anything we hope for this team, it's to be like you guys. So thank you again for giving us, you know, a few minutes of your time tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome, guys. I mean, I love talking about this stuff. It's probably easier to talk about than it actually is to execute in the real world. And, you know, we'll make, I've made mistakes. We will make mistakes. We don't always nail it. But it really helps if you can sort of like nail those team values and your philosophy and do your best to implement them. And then you can weather the mistakes that you make along the way as well.
Well, Pete, I can't thank you enough for sharing so much wisdom with us. And there's, I mean, I've learned quite a few things that I think I need to work on to make our program better, but I really do appreciate you sharing that with us. And thank you so much, and hope you have a good holiday season, and hopefully Colorado gets some snow too. I don't know. It's pretty dry here in Utah.
It's great riding weather this time of
yeah.
year.
Huh? Oh, I know. It's pretty grim. So yeah, we're praying for snow here.
Yeah.
All right, Pete. Well, thank you again, man. For the rest of you guys, thanks so much for listening. Make sure to train safe this week, and we will talk to you guys soon.